This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 Thursday afternoon, February 27th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The closing of retail stores could impact availability and prices for shoppers. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, data on the economy, home sales, and jobless claims is out, along with the latest on import tariffs. Let's look this, put this latest information into perspective with the help of Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG. In Chicago. Diane, thank you for joining us today. And let's pick up the discussion about jobless claims that we just heard in the business report, up to 242,000. That is more than expected, more than the Dow Jones estimate. But I guess, Diane, what everybody is looking for and keeping an eye on is these discussed federal layoffs actually manifesting themselves in the numbers. Because if President Trump and Elon Musk, if they get their way, based on some of these memos that you see coming out of the White House about staff reductions across a number of departments, that could have a profound effect on unemployment going forward.
It could, and that's what we're only seeing the very beginning of some of the furloughs out there, and I think that's important. It's still very early in the game. There are only a little over 600 federal employees that actually registered for initial unemployment claims in that week, and I think that's important to remember that this is not fully showing that at all yet, and we're concerned about what we see going forward. And there's knockoff effects for grant recipients, a chilling effect in higher education institutions, and how state and local governments are going to get funds. These are the areas of the economy that have shown a lot of employment gains since mid-2023, and so you worry about that at the same time that you're also curbing the availability of immigrants to work. Many asylum seekers are no longer legal immigrants in this country, and that means that they cannot work as well. And they were filling a lot of positions in the service sector, of course, that many native-born workers do not fill.
And then when it comes to new home sales dropping 4.6% from December, this is one of the lowest levels since this metric began nearly 25 years ago. How much of this is weather? How much of this is just frustration with elevated mortgage rates?
All of the above. We had two of the worst winter storms. It was the coldest January on record since 1988. We had two really bad winter storms in the most important new home sale market, the South. And that is important. We had snow in places like Louisiana. They just don't have that. So that slowed down. And new home sales are booked the minute that you make the bid on the house, not when you close it, unlike existing home sales. So it's very coincident with what happened with the weather. But that said, we also had mortgage rates were very high during the month, and it's not just mortgage rates. It's everything from homeowners insurance to higher real estate taxes and just the upkeep of homes that's being a huge hurdle to affordability out there. Mortgage rates have since come down a little bit, opened a window for some buyers out there, and there still is very tight inventories in parts of the country. Parts of the country that have excess inventories are in the South now.
And then very quickly, Diane, it's kind of hard to believe that last year is getting further and further in the rearview mirror. I mean, March 1st is on Saturday, but 2024 went out on a fairly solid note as far as the gross domestic product is concerned, 2.3% growth annualized in the fourth quarter.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, what we had originally seen, but there were a little slight upward revision to consumer spending, which really accelerated. And we saw some of that reflected. People buying electric vehicle sales went to their highest level on record in December. And that's because they were trying to get ahead of what could be the end of tax breaks for those kinds of vehicles. And so there was some pulling ahead of demand and front running of tariffs in the vehicle market as well. The other side of it, though, is that we're seeing almost half of all consumer spending driven by the top 10% of households, where not only do they have home ownership already and have a lot of wealth there, they've also experienced a lot of equity market and financial market wealth, and that's really supporting the economy. But it gives us this sense of how the economy adds up to be great on paper, but not feel as good to the overwhelming majority of Americans as inequality worsens.
Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago, thank you for joining us today.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A host of retailers from JCPenney to Macy's continue to shrink their footprint as shoppers face potential price hikes and limited product availability. Let's discuss the state of brick and mortar with Bob Phibbs, CEO of the Retail Doctor in New York, the website retaildoc.com. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like you have a tale of two retail sectors when it comes to physical brick and mortar facilities, because the shopping malls that have managed to weather the test of time. When it comes to holiday time, good luck finding a parking space. They are busier than ever before, and in some cases, these surviving shopping malls have occupancy rates that are higher than before the COVID pandemic. And yet, a number of other retail giants, former retail giants, are shrinking their footprint. So where are we heading now as far as physical retail store space?
Well, retailers have always been adapting, and the retailers that are closing, I mean, you're closing poor performing Macy's or Joann was a big one. You know, they had tried to do a redo and they kind of got caught up in the COVID momentum, like everyone will always be doing fabrics, and maybe not. You didn't need 800 stores. Maybe the demand was really 300 stores. You know, you look at when Lumber Liquors went private, they cut half of their stores down because they weren't profitable. So at the same time, we're losing stores. And going back to your point about the malls are being propelled by younger generations are going there and shopping with friends. So that's really important. But there's also a bunch of other stores that are opening. Boot Barn's opening 60. Barnes & Noble is opening 60. There's a lot that's happening. But quite simply, there's so many retailers that are open that we think, oh my gosh, the sky is falling. But it's not going to be less choice. And, you know, online is always going to be there now. But what's happening is we're getting smaller footprints, and we're getting more of a kind of boutique way of shopping than big warehouses. And I think that's exciting for consumers.
How many retailers, when they have a physical brick and mortar space, how many are renting the space at a shopping development? And how many own the land underneath it, which in the end is probably the most valuable asset of the operation?
Well, that's a really interesting point. You know, Sears was known for getting 99-year leases. And that's where they thought that Eddie Lampert went and got the company, because those were really lucrative because it was so low. I know when they put a Sears in South Coast Plaza, Costa Mesa, California, I think all they had to pay was a dollar. But they would build the shopping store for them because they were desperate to have someone in there. Well, those days are gone. So, you know, the ones that are paid their buildings are usually going to be like Home Depot. That's how they expanded. I know there are several big chains, but most are going to be leasing these days. And we are seeing an uptake in leasing as well. I don't know necessarily on Michigan Avenue, but we're hearing it around the country. What are your thoughts?
Well, I was going to say, what happens to some of these shopping developments that were built around a big box or larger retailer that's deciding to pare back on its footprint? I mean, there's a second order effect there, and I'm guessing you cannot fill all former Bed Bath and Beyond locations with a trampoline park.
Maybe you could, though. No, but one of the challenges, Walmart just bought an entire mall in Pennsylvania. I mean, that's really interesting, but they're really hard to redevelop in pieces. And malls are often owned by a lot of different investors and a lot of different parcels underneath them. So it becomes really kind of hard to have one vision. That's why you see the Simons of the world and the other ones are able to do more. And again, retail has always been about change. It's always been about finding where that customer is. And as much as people want to say they're all online, 80% are still shopping in a brick and mortar store. So get out there, and consumers continue to prop up the country. It's that simple. Everybody's been saying they're going to stop, And we've been hearing that for 5 years. They're still spending. So I think it's an exciting time, and people are trying different concepts, and the consumers seem to be enjoying it.
Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Find him online at theretaildoc.com. Coming up next on this Technology Thursday, teenage boys are the targets of financial sextortion. We'll go in depth.
It's 60 minutes of financial planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday, and in this segment, we're focusing on a cybercrime that targets teenage boys. We're joined by Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions and member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force based in Chicago. Jerry, thank you for joining us today. And not too long ago, Jerry, there was a seminar for parents at the school where my girls attend about teaching good cyber habits to your children, how to navigate social media, setting limits on phones. But the largest chunk of the discussion was devoted to online gaming safety. And they said the most common, the most dangerous activity, the most dangerous thing your teenage kids can encounter while gaming online are these sextortion scams, where someone poses as a teenage girl. They convince your teenage son to send them a compromising picture, and then it's give us money or we tell everybody and your life is ruined. And that has literally cost dozens of teenagers their lives.
Yeah, it's very sad that these kids are being taken advantage of this way. And other than training your kids, there's not a lot you can do except potentially installing applications on their machines. So there are applications like Bark and NetNanny and different things that you can install on computers that will show basically any messaging, instant messaging, anything like that that's going on. The problem becomes more on the cell phones when they start sexting and sending pictures of this these type. There are very few applications that you can run on a phone to monitor and delete texts. Now, there are some out there specific to Androids. There's very few for iPhones, but there are applications that, that parents can install if they want to be more hands-on to get this done. Typically, what we suggest is training. And the federal government is even seeing this as a major issue. CISA, which is the Cyber Infrastructure and Network Association, actually has some free classes that are online geared towards teens, anywhere from ninth grade to graduating of high school, that allow them to learn more about these types of crimes, malware and cyber fraud. And they make it pretty interesting. There are games and stuff that they can do as well. So they're geared towards kids. They're free. You can put them on there. The one thing that you can do to make your kids maybe want to do it, especially boys, if they're interested in computers at all, these applications can teach them the basics of cybersecurity, which for the future really can help them with their career as well. So there's some motivation. Let me show you how to protect yourself. Let me, you know, let's make it fun. Let's see the information. But it's also give you something that you can learn that you might be able to, you know, make some money on in the future.
And very quickly, Jerry, it seems like the lesson that you can impart immediately is that the person sending you an image, they are no different than the person who is sending you or I the phony toll balance text message. It's bogus. The person's on the other side of the world. Ignore it. But what if you find yourself in a situation where your son passed the picture along, and now they say, we're going to tell everybody. Given the fact that the scammer is on some other continent and they'll just move on to the next person, do you ignore it? Do you report it? What should you do as opposed to just giving the person the money?
Yeah, you never give money, and that's what something we have to teach our kids to. You never give money, because as soon as you do, they're going to, you know, somebody else is going to be calling you, or the same person with a different ID. So you never give money, and you just you really have to ignore it. Yep, you did that stuff. It's out there. Who cares? Right. Understand that moving forward, you're gonna do differently. And you do have to have conversation with your kids. I've got four kids, you know, two boys and two girls. And over the years, I've had conversations with them. Everything you put online is going to come back and get you. But the bottom line is, who cares? We've all done stupid things in our life. You know, I can tell you more than my share, right? And so you let your kids know, I've done stupid things too. It happens. But you teach them how to protect themselves moving forward.
Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions, thank you for joining us today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omisid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omisid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Jury selection is complete at the trial of the accused Highland Park Parade killer. Workers at one of America's leading foreign aid agencies are cleaning out their desks today. In Technology Thursday, an upcoming summit in Chicago will focus on extended reality tech. Also on the technology beat, the startup incubator 1871 leaving the merchandise mart. Business, the markets are mixed. The Dow is up 284 points. The NASDAQ is down 100. The S&P 500 is up just a fraction. It's 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, opening statements are scheduled to begin Monday at the trial of accused Highland Park Parade shooter Robert Cremo III. The jury consists of six women and six men, along with six alternates. The 24-year-old Cremo faces 70 felony counts, including 21 of first-degree murder, three each for the seven people he killed. He's pleaded not guilty and also rejected a plea deal. Hundreds of people who worked at the United States Agency for International Development are taking home their belongings today. CBS's Caitlin Huey Burns is outside of USAID headquarters.
Anytime a worker, or now a former worker of USAID, comes out of the building with their belongings, this crowd is cheering them on. What is happening today is that USAID workers were given an increment of time, 15 minutes, to come in and clear out their belongings from their desks or workspaces.
The move-out comes in the same day that CBS News confirms that nearly $60 billion in grants have been cut from USAID and the State Department. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are mixed. We're joined by Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager, MacroTides.com, based in San Diego. Jim, thank you for joining us today. Before we talk about today's market activity, let's talk about the big thing that happened after the closing bell yesterday. And it seems like, Jim, there are now three constants in life: death, taxes, and NVIDIA once again beating its analyst expectations.
You nailed it, Rob. What's caused some selling, if you will, in NVIDIA is even though revenues were up 78%, sequentially, it was a smaller increase. And that's the problem when you get these huge growth stories, Rob. Eventually, the growth rate has to slow down and investors react to it. So I think that's why you're seeing such a muted reaction to what otherwise was a pretty good earnings report from NVIDIA.
And it also seems to once again provide a good dose of confidence to investors and others who were doubting the viability of the AI space. I mean, we know AI is here. We know it has some benefits, but there has been some doubt that it's going to be this world transformative technology, at least today. That we're not going to change things overnight, but it still seems like as far as NVIDIA is concerned and it's providing some confidence in the AI space that it's still worth investing all that money.
Well, what the big mega cap companies in terms of Microsoft, Meta, Google, they've already told us that they're going to increase spending from about $240 billion last year to about $340 billion this year. So the amount of money that's flowing into this space is enormous. And I think what's going to happen at some point in time, just what I mentioned about NVIDIA, where the growth rate slows, even though it's still very good, that is coming, I think, for, in general, this whole technology and stocks related to the AI experience, Rob, and that's when I think you're going to see a dip, because the amount of spending so far isn't generating an equal amount of return on those investments. That's going to take a number of years, and I think that's what's coming over the next 6 to 12 months, where people are like, wow, they're spending a lot of money, that's great, but when are we going to see the payoff? And that's going to take a while.
I was going to say, I'm prefacing all of my AI commentary as it hasn't happened yet. It probably will happen. It's not going to happen in a way that we predict, but I certainly don't want to be one of the voices 20 years from now where they say, well, look at what all these Luddites were saying about AI. I don't want to be on that list. So I'm couching all of my commentary, Jim. Other things popping today, of course, more tariff discussion once again, but it seems like as far as the markets are concerned, they've taken an attitude that is, you know, we'll believe it when we see it, because right now, once again, there's a deadline that's going to be set for the imposition of tariffs, and it's always pulled back at the last second.
I think you nailed it, Rob. That is the attitude, and I think that attitude is wrong, because I do think President Trump, like it or not, is serious about generating revenue for the federal government and trying to create a more equal level playing field for U.S. exporters. And the net result is, I think we're going to see the tariffs go through. And I'm not a fan of tariffs, but I do think that once it becomes obvious that that, in fact, is going to happen, I'm not sure the market's going to like that. Ultimately, if you try to cut government spending from a deficit of 6.4%, $2 trillion down to $1 trillion, it's going to have a negative impact on GDP growth. So I think, Rob, it's just a question of when the combination of tariff increases, cutting government spending is going to cause a wake-up call where people realize, wow, these guys are serious. And the implication is that the economy is going to slow as a result of all this.
Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager, MacroTides.com in San Diego. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, a preview of the Chicago XR Summit, which is coming to the city this spring.
Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday, and Chicago will host the XR Summit on June 4th at the Illinois Institute of Technology's University Technology Park, uniting top industry leaders to explore the latest in augmented and virtual reality technologies. Joining us with the details is Matt Wren, tech expert and founder, VRAR Chicago, based in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And what does it mean to Chicago and its perception in the world of tech that everybody involved in augmented reality and virtual reality will be gathering under one roof in Chicago later this year?
You know, the point, and thanks for having me back, Rob, first of all, the whole point of this is just to raise some awareness, to open the eyes among Chicago's business community of the, frankly, massive opportunities for cost savings and new revenue streams that, you know, the improvements that they can get in operational efficiency by implementing virtual reality and augmented reality solutions. We're here to raise awareness. That's the point of it.
And then when we talk about the latest developments in both VR and AR, where are we at right now, especially with augmented reality? I mean, I think there have been a number of attempts of bringing augmented reality into the consumer space, but it's definitely happening, though, in specialized industries and specialized practices.
Absolutely. There are tons of industries that stand to benefit from this, from healthcare to manufacturing to transportation logistics. And, you know, there's lots of solutions. You've got virtual reality where you're wearing the headsets like a Meta Quest. It's got the capabilities for mixed reality where you're sort of doing the same thing, but in pass-through where you can see kind of a video feed of the physical space. And augmented reality is still around too. Devices like Magic Leap might have gone away or they might be on suspended, but there's other solutions from DigiLens, from Vuzix, from other companies. And this technology, frankly, presents a huge opportunity. And that's, frankly, why we've kind of, you know, we're targeting the business leaders in Chicago as sort of the attendees of this event and the XR industry as the exhibitors. And we're partnering with pretty much every innovation and economic development organization in Chicago to host it. We've got, you know, P33, Chicago Innovation, 2112, Discovery Partners Institute. They're all behind this event. They're all partnered with us for it. And on the XR side, we've got two of the world's largest XR industry organizations in Augmented World Expo and XR Women supporting it as well. So it's going to be a huge event.
Now, this has been going on since 2018. How has this event evolved since then? And how have some of the technological applications changed over that time?
I mean, the technology is changing very, very rapidly. But I do want to be clear. We've only held one Chicago XR Summit before. There's only been one in 2018. We've been hosting a monthly event series that educates ever since 2017, actually. But there's only been one sort of big event like this in the past, and that was held in 2018. And we had about 350 attendees. We actually, you know, capacity the space that we had at that point. This year, we're targeting around 600 or so attendees. We're going to have 25 to 35 companies exhibiting. And the big thing I want to bring up, too, is this is a not-for-profit activity. It's actually free to attend. There's going to be tickets required, and we're going to start making those available in April. But the whole point of this is, again, we want this to be an economic growth opportunity for Chicago. We really want to sort of plant the flag and put Chicago on the map as we should be the center of the United States, if not the world, for business-to-business use cases for virtual reality and augmented reality.
Now, not too long ago, Matt, I was on a panel for discussion of the use of artificial intelligence, and the takeaway was that AI is such a moving target that everything we say today will probably be irrelevant or very wrong 1 year from now. Is that the case in VR and XR and AR, that it's such a moving target and the technology is moving so quickly that what we talk about today could be a very different world a year from now?
It does move very quickly. There's a lot of development that is ongoing all of the time. But the big takeaway is that there are viable enterprise-ready solutions that are available today that can return, you know, tens to even hundreds of millions of dollars to enterprises that implement them. It is a very valuable technology. Even small scale implementations can have a huge impact and a huge return. And it's, the developments in VR and AR technology, they're not throwaway. The things that you develop today, they should, you know, when you develop them correctly, they're going to be available as the technology evolves over time. A lot of people call it sort of the interface to AI, that VR and AR are going to be the interface to artificial intelligence as time evolves.
Matt Wren, tech expert and founder, VR AR Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, a downtown Chicago startup incubator is leaving its longtime home.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Technology Thursday rolls on. The startup incubator 1871 leaving its longtime home at the Merchandise Mart. Let's see what's behind this move from John Pletz, senior reporter, Crane Chicago Business. John, thank you for joining us today. And at first blush, it looks like 1871 and the Merchandise Mart are parting ways simply because they both kind of evolved beyond the need for each other.
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it. The bigger issue there, I think, is that 1871 is really feeling, the post-pandemic, real estate changes more than anybody,
because more or less it has become it's become more of a virtual space, 1871, than one that really relied on physical space, especially in a building as large as the Merchandise Mart. And I think that is a discovery that a lot of organizations are making, whether they're in the Mart or in other office buildings in downtown Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, tech startups are particularly prone to working remote. COVID completely turbocharged that, and that was what 1871 was created for. When it started, one of the biggest problems that startups had was finding flexible, affordable space. And if space is no longer a big concern if you're starting a company, then that really makes it tough for 1871. So you've got a lot of space and not a lot of tenants, and that just doesn't pencil out for very long.
Now, the Merchandise Mart has had a history of fostering high tech, and this goes all the way back to the early days of radio, when the National Broadcasting Company set up their radio and television facilities in the Merchandise Mart to try out some newfangled thing called television, sending test patterns in 1948. So the Merchandise Mart and tech have had a very long, multi-decade relationship. What is the state of play for tech in the Mart right now?
There are still a number of tech companies in there, everything from logistics and insurance software. Motorola still has about 500 people there, the phone business that's now owned by Lenovo. So there's still plenty of companies in the Mart. There are companies that need office space. 1871 as an entity just wasn't one of them.
John Pletz, senior reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Thank you for joining us today. It's